You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
While the holiday period brings lots of social occasions with family and friends, it also brings up lots of opportunities for heated conversations about life, the universe, and everything. Sometimes this ventures into dangerous territories and you realise that there's some people who you probably just don't need to talk to about these things. And occasionally, something really important and relevant comes up. One topic of conversation that seemed to be jumping out at any opportunity and that everyone miraculously seemed to agree on was the government's lack of support for the arts and creative industries. While I sat there kind of aggressively agreeing with everyone, I realised that as someone who does work in the arts and creative industries, I didn't really know what I was agreeing with. So I started on a mission to actually understand this topic and to speak to people who were educated about it and knew exactly what they were talking about. For a base understanding, so we're all on the same page, the Ministry of Culture and Heritage has separate agencies that are government funded and is the main way that artists in New Zealand are supported. Creative New Zealand is one of these agencies, which provides grants and funding to individuals or groups within arts such as dance, theatre, music, etc. Another is New Zealand On Air, which focuses more specifically on music, broadcasting and media related projects. Then there's the Film Commission, so obviously films, and the New Zealand Music Commission is more focused on helping export artists to global markets, as well as running Music Month and Outward Sound. These aren't all the agencies under the Ministry of Culture and Heritage, but there's some of the key ones that might come up. Starting with a university paper by Molly Robson, she addressed this topic. She talked about the negative stigma that an art student faced regarding the relevance of their degree and how the emphasis on critical thought that goes into a BA is seemingly dismissed over vocational degrees. She also mentioned the comments that Eleanor Catton made in 2014 regarding how she felt uncomfortable being branded as a literary ambassador for New Zealand when her country does so little for the artistic world. While a lot of attention around Catton's comments centred on a disrespect and lack of pride in being a New Zealander, it objectively missed the point. As a successful New Zealand creative who has received upwards of $50,000 of government funding, she spoke on behalf of those who haven't received this. Instead of understanding where her comments are coming from and what merit they have, there was a surge of political figures and media outlets discussing her anti-patriotism. During the local body elections, Chloe Swarbrick's policy regarding arts and culture focused not only on increased funding for creatives, but also creating opportunities for collaborations between creative and local governments. I spoke with her and asked what fed into creating that policy.
I was looking at the kind of Auckland that we currently live in and the kind of Auckland that we should be aspiring to be and live in, and having for the past few years been involved in a bunch of creative projects with a bunch of people who are incredibly talented but for some reason or another stay underground. I was just pushing the envelope and asking why that is the case, why so many of them flock to Melbourne and London and New York as opposed to feeding Auckland and making it a beautiful city, you know, alive and all the rest. So what I found looking into Auckland Council and the funding and the grants that it had available is that there was actually quite a bit out there. But talking to creatives, no one that I spoke to knew that these existed. So there seemed to be a bit of an issue with accessibility in that respect, not necessarily that the money wasn't there, but the people didn't know it was there. And I think that that's probably part and parcel with the culture of Auckland and Greater New Zealand, which is that the arts, whether that be traditional or, I don't know, media on television or otherwise, isn't really, it's seen as something that people do in other countries, you know, like we actually do import a lot of our media and arts as well, especially the kinds of things that we see on TV.
Accessibility seemed to be the key issue. Not necessarily that the support wasn't there, but that there was a disconnect between the funding and the application for it. A quick look at Creative New Zealand shows multiple funding grants open for applications, so were they not being applied for, or was there simply not enough? I spoke with Sam Scott, the founder and artistic director of Massive Theatre Company, about her experiences with finding funding. Massive has been running for 25 years and is focused on creating opportunities and growth for young people exploring theatre. She explained that government funding is about 40% of the income of Massive and meant that 2 years ago she was finally able to go onto a full-time salary. However, she also described that, yes, while there are grants available, it hasn't always been that simple. They used to be very broad, and it meant that two completely different types of work were competing for the same funding.
When I first started the company, because I was pioneering an area as well, because young people's theatre was not a developed area in this country. I mean, it's still pretty not developed compared to places like Australia or like the UK, where young people's theatre is a huge strata of the arts. Here it's still not, you know, it's still quite unique. So on that level, I mean, when I first started as well, I had to apply. There was no specific acknowledgement of young people's theatre being any different from any other kind of theatre. So I had to apply with everybody else that was applying. So whereas in Australia, say, or in the UK, you can apply under different manifestos and you are recognised for those different areas. So, you know, whether you work in circus or whether you work in youth arts or whether you work in mainstream arts or whatever. Whereas when I first started, and for a long, long time, there was no special young people's theatre manifesto on any level. And then it started to become developed, and so we were able to build a recognition of that within Creative New Zealand and such like, so that there is now, you know, and we've been recognised for that in our Totara funding. So we're recognised as leaders in that development of people in the arts. But, you know, initially I just had to apply with anybody else that was applying for anything, and, you know, you got your funding on the on its merit. And on some, you know, and as I said, we were relatively successful in that. You know, I can't think of many things we were turned down for. And so, you know, that enabled us to keep going as it has and to build it over the 25 years.
So as is the nature with most government issues, this isn't a black and white topic. It's filled with opinions and facts that are all relative to different situations. Both Chloe and Sam brought up the focus that New Zealand has on sport and our inbuilt culture of stoicism that is hugely at ends with the nature of the arts. This in particular, that means that the arts, and in a Conservative government, isn't the biggest priority. But from here, I'm also going to have a chat with our Wire host today, Jimena Smith, who has done a lot of research in this area.
Yeah, I mean, I guess because I've just finished my my master's thesis, where I kind of look at the experiences of New Zealand musicians in the music community in New Zealand. And a lot of the, it was really interesting to look at a lot of the literature and a lot of the context of government support in the creative fields like music. I specifically looked more into music, but also with the literature they looked at, I sort of saw it more broadly as well. So other things like, you know, like art and design and sort of other sort of creative fields. And so what was interesting is that, you know, in 1999, early 2000s, when the Helen Clark government was in power, that there was this kind of focus about how creative fields could be these things that would support the economy, that there was like, that there were creative industries, that they could provide jobs, and they were, you know, that would, that there was this market focus, which is really interesting because, you know, that's great because there was this new renewed focus on creative fields then, but then nevertheless there is that market focus. And I think that's really interesting how it, that helped a lot of artists at that time, but also like, is that that's limiting as well. And so that's just kind of my sort of thoughts on how it exists at the moment, is that there is that kind of market focus in a lot of for a lot of agencies, a lot of government agencies helping the creative industries, but that might not work for all all artists.
Yeah, totally. And it kind of I feel like it comes with that label of being like a sellout, and you know, that kind of thing as well. So what association does BFM have with New Zealand On Air?
So New Zealand On Air does give funding to BFM.
Right, okay. Yeah. I was also looking at the public funding report from New Zealand On Air regarding RNZ. Mm-hmm. And RNZ receives like $31 or $32 million a year, or I don't know how that works, but obviously, RNZ is New Zealand's public broadcasting service, so of course they're going to be funded and there's going to be a lot of money there for them. But I'm just trying to understand that kind of in relation to anything. Like, I don't understand if that's a lot of money or if that's not a lot of money for a public broadcasting service. Do you, I mean, Do you know anything about that? Or
I mean, I guess also like broadcasting, we're slightly going into a slightly different area. But yeah. I think what's interesting about RNZ getting money is that, you know, there are bodies who are like, yeah, we need more funding for RNZ, we need more funding for a public service. But nevertheless, when I was talking to a colleague at AUT about it when I was teaching over there, that he said that it's interesting because they definitely get that money every year.
Mm.
So, you know, it's kind of enabling in that sort of perspective. Mm. Is that kind of what you were...
Yeah, 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 I guess so. I couldn't work out, because obviously 31 million just sounds like a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I couldn't work out if that actually would be enough to fund... you know, a broadcasting unit like that.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, people are saying, yeah, we need more because there's more demands on media organisations, you know, in the digital age, that they're needing to compete with not just other radio stations. RNZ isn't just competing against other radio stations, but they're also competing against television stations, and also like in the global sort of media market as well, because now everyone can access you know, other news organizations overseas online.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, it's still kind of great that they still definitely get that money every year, whereas other commercial media organizations, they never know what's going to happen. I mean, they've got like a commercial business model, but they never know what they're going to get. It's never a definite, like, I guess, RNZ's money. So right. That's kind of like an interesting spin on it. But definitely a lot of people are like, well, we need RNZ to get more money so that they can do more. So it's contested.
Well, I mean, I think this whole kind of topic in general is contested. As I said, it's like not black and white, but I've had a lot of fun kind of researching into it and trying to work out kind of where everyone sits on the issue.
Yeah, and I guess
how
also
it works like that.
Absolutely. And I guess also another really common argument as well is that, well, of course the government wants to support things that have, you know, that might succeed in a market, because if there isn't an audience for something, then why should the government be funding it if no one's going to listen to it? So of course, that's also like another very common argument. But I don't know, I think a diverse range of art should always be, you know, supported by, I think the government should be able to support things that might not work in a market, because, you know, having that diverse range of options available is definitely an important thing, and not all things work in a marketplace. So,
And I equally think that perhaps it's, you know, it's not, you can't understand the demand until it's there, until the...
It's a hard thing to project sometimes. For sure.
If you have an opinion of this, or you know something that you feel we've missed, can you please call in on the number
309-3879 or give us a text, 5395. Awesome, cool report, Olivia.
Thanks.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.